Hey everybody, it's Shaman Sister Sin, and you're listening to yet another episode of the Meditations and More podcast brought to you by LittleShaman.com. That's me, Little Shaman. Today I want to talk to you about something that's come up here and there. I've actually had a couple people ask me about it lately, which is a little weird, so I thought I would go ahead and address that. People sometimes ask me if I think that narcissists or psychopaths could be possessed, or if I think that they might have dark energy or a dark entity around them or near them. The answer to that for me is yes, I have entertained that thought, and yes, I do believe that it's possible. Maybe not for all of them, but for some of them. And I think it's entirely possible that narcissists can be the victim of what we would call oppression, which is harassment by an energy or some type of spirit. Having to do with shamanism myself, as I do, the question of spirits and energies and things like that is really not a question for me. I know what I've seen. I know what I've experienced. But for others, it's sort of a gray area. There are people who believe, there are people who don't believe, and there are people who just aren't sure. So I'm just going to talk about this a little bit today, give my take on it, and as always, I welcome your comments and your stories. Humans have been fascinated by demonic possession since the beginning of time. It has been used to explain everything from babies conceived out of wedlock to mental illness and serial killers. But what is it really? Does demonic possession really happen? If so, is it like The Exorcist, where it's very obvious, or could it be more subtle? Have we become too rational or too exposed to the Hollywood ideal in modern day society to the point where we no longer even entertain the possibility that things beyond our understanding can exist? If we have, this is perhaps dangerous thinking. After all, it has been stated that the greatest trick the devil ever played on the world was convincing people that he didn't exist. So let's talk about the science-based case for possession. Undoubtedly, many cases of supposed possession can be chalked up to mental illness, seizures, or just simple fakery. However, there are some situations that science simply cannot explain very well at all. Though there are many we could examine for the sake of brevity, we will look at two of the more blatant cases in recent history for this podcast. In order to be as fact-based as possible, we are only going to look at what facts are in evidence for each case. The first one we're going to look at is the case of a girl named Annalise, and this was in the 70s. It's well known that Annalise did suffer from seizures, and she was diagnosed with epilepsy. It's well known that Annalise had been hospitalized for psychiatric illness and received psychiatric drugs. However, many of her symptoms didn't really appear to coincide with psychiatric illness, other than they were just not normal and seemed crazy. She was on multiple medications almost right up until her death, including antipsychotics, and they did not help. It's also important to note that Annalise and her family did not start out believing that she was possessed. They only came to believe this after years of medical and psychiatric treatment did not help her at all. Annalise was hospitalized many times, but she just continued to get worse. She began to become very aggressive. She became very bizarre. She drank her own urine and ate bugs. She refused all food and water. Her mother told stories of actual physical changes which took place with Annalise's body that mental illness and science do not explain. It was reported that Annalise would be, quote, forced to the floor and she would not be able to get up for hours, though she clearly wanted to. It was also reported that Annalise spoke languages she had never studied and should not have been able to use. Now, this could just be the incorrect, hysterical memory of a grieving mother who felt she failed her child. It is entirely possible that the mother just needed to blame something else. Much of Annalise's behavior could possibly be explained by delusions and psychosis. A hysterical, guilt-ridden mother and psychotic delusions do not explain, though, how Annalise was able to live as long as she lived in the condition that she was in. Nothing really explains that. Annalise refused to drink or eat anything for almost a year. She weighed 68 pounds when she died, and she was so dehydrated that her face had actually begun to blacken. There are pictures of this if you were interested in looking at them. She endured exorcism sessions for 4 hours a day, okay, 2 to 3 times a week for about 10 months. There are recordings of these exorcism sessions. They're available on YouTube. I do not recommend listening to them, but I did hear parts of them. Throughout these sessions, she screamed almost nonstop and thrashed all over the bed. Now, aside from the near universal opinion, and this is not a fact, it's just an opinion, that the screams do not sound like they're coming from a 20-year-old female, how someone in that condition could continue to scream like that for hours on end defies logic. How she had the strength to even speak, let alone scream at that volume for hours when she was so dehydrated and suffering from pneumonia, defies logic and science. I am actually a vocalist and I do a lot of different styles of singing. And one of my favorite is heavy metal growling. It's one of the styles that I have perfected. And it's a very strenuous way to sing because it's essentially screaming. And I can tell you from my own experience that to keep it up nonstop for 4 hours without your voice giving out is almost impossible. It's very, very difficult. She also had broken knees from nonstop genuflections. Genuflections are when you get on your knees and you bow forward to the ground. She was doing more than 600 of those a day. How could someone who was unable to even stand without help for months have done that enough to break both of their knees? Now, is it humanly possible for Annalise to have done all of these things in the condition that she was reportedly in? Sure, maybe. Lots of things are humanly possible, even if they don't seem to be at first. Is this likely, though? No, it's not. By all rights and according to what we know about the human body, Annalise should have been dead long before she actually died. Interestingly, the priest who carried out the exorcism on Annalise claimed to have finally freed her from the parasitic presence within her, and it was only then that she died. It was also reported that Annalise predicted the day of her death exactly. In order to believe that Annalise was not possessed, it is necessary to dismiss multiple eyewitness testimony, disregard biology and what we know about the human body, disregard what we know about psychiatric illness, epilepsy, and psychopharmacology, dismiss her abysmal condition, which was documented by doctors with photographs and by her autopsy, and believe that being mentally ill somehow gives people superhuman abilities to stay alive even though their body should not be able to keep going. This is not as hard for people as it sounds with poor Annalise, considering who the witnesses are. Many people take a very dim view of religious people and Catholic priests especially. The rest of the reports and testimony are from a grieving mother. So it's understandable why some people can dismiss Annalise's story. It's a little harder, though, to dismiss the eyewitnesses in the next story we're going to talk about. Our next story takes place in the late 2000s. It is the story of Latoya Ammon's children. Latoya Ammons showed up in the emergency room claiming that her children were showing signs of demonic possession. She claimed that her children's eyes would bulge and they would smile oddly, that they just didn't seem like themselves. She claimed the children spoke in deep voices and that they talked to people who weren't there. Mrs. Ammons' 12-year-old daughter reported that she felt she was being held down or choked. This is very common with these type of stories. And that she'd heard a voice tell her she'd never see her family again because she wouldn't live another 20 minutes. Ms. Ammon reported seeing her 12-year-old child levitate from the bed, another very common thing, and claimed to have seen other things in her home that were not normal, including wet footprints. Ms. Ammon had attempted to cleanse the home, burning sage and reciting prayers, but it hadn't worked. Finally, Ms. Ammon took her children to the family physician because she didn't know what else to do. What followed next was not only witnessed by a doctor and medical staff, but it was written in the DCS caseworker's official report. And in the information for this video, there is a link to an article that has links to all of the reports. In the hospital, one of Mrs. Ammon's sons began to rage and curse at the doctor in what he called a demonic voice. Medical personnel reported that the youngest boy was lifted into the air and thrown into the wall, even though nobody was touching him. Both children then abruptly passed out in unison and could not be revived. 911 was called and the police came. The boys were transported to another hospital. When the children awoke, the younger child seemed okay, but the older boy thrashed and screamed. It apparently took 5 men to hold this 9-year-old boy down. So far, nothing that couldn't be explained by mental illness or a psychotic episode. It's a little strange that it would take five people to hold a 9-year-old child down, but that could be explained by psychosis. Now, it was at this time that social services was called on LaToya Ammons. The caller believed that the children were performing, that's their word, for the mother, and that the delusion actually was the mother's delusion. A psychiatrist at the hospital would later examine Mrs. Ammons and conclude that she was not mentally ill. A DCS family case manager came to the hospital to interview the family. Finding the children healthy and free of bruises or any signs of physical abuse, the caseworker then attempted to speak to Ms. Ammons. The 7-year-old child began growling deep in his throat and he attacked the brother, choking him. The child refused to let go until adults pried his hands apart. A little while later, the caseworker and a registered nurse moved the children to a small interview room to speak with them. The 7-year-old began to growl again, stating in an unnatural voice, "It's time to die and I will kill you." And the 9-year-old began to attack the grandmother. The grandmother grabbed her grandson's hands and began praying. What happened next was in the caseworker's official report, again I do have links, and was corroborated by the RN who also witnessed it. The 9-year-old child walked backward up the wall to the ceiling, flipped over his grandmother, and landed on the ground, all the while never releasing his grandmother's hand. The caseworker and the nurse both ran from the room. They went and told the doctor what happened. The doctor came into the room and asked the child if he could duplicate what he had just done. The child did not know what he was talking about, but did attempt to do so and was unable. Police later asked the caseworker if the child ran up the wall the way someone would do if they were performing a feat of gymnastics. The caseworker stated he glided backward on the floor, wall, and ceiling. Resulting police investigations and reports detail odd happenings, including photos which show figures that officers swear were not there when the picture was taken, and a police recording that features an unknown voice saying, "Hey." Even officers who did not believe in demonic possession or who thought Ms. Ammons was just trying to get money somehow from this story became convinced that something was wrong with LaToya Ammons' home and with her children. Ms. Ammons' children were removed from the home. The home and Ms. Ammons were repeatedly exorcised, and after about 6 months, Ms. Ammons was able to rid herself of the parasites and move away from the home. She then got her children back, and there have been no problems with possession or anything else since 2012. Now, in order to dismiss this story, you have to disregard the laws of physics, gravity, and what we know about the human body. You have to dismiss the eyewitness accounts of many people. People who are not simple, heartbroken religious parents or Catholic priests and other people who were too close to the situation. They are doctors, nurses, police officers, and DCS family case managers, among others. You have to believe that these rational, intelligent professionals, who certainly had nothing to gain and perhaps a lot to lose, falsified official documents, police reports, and had group hallucinations on more than one occasion. You have to believe that doctors and psychiatrists lied about their findings. Again, is that possible? Sure, maybe. Is it likely? No. Now, these things are not things that we would see all the time. Those types of, I guess what we could call manifestation, are not exactly common in everybody's life. It's not something that you might see all the time. But what about other types of manifestations or possessions? Because in cases like the ones we've just discussed, possession would be pretty easy to recognize. I mean, if somebody's walking backwards up the wall, obviously something's going on. Somebody might not believe that it's a case of possession, but it's pretty obvious that something is wrong. But what about other situations where a negative energy or dark entity could be affecting someone's life in a more subtle way? There might be cases of minor harassment from negative energy in many people, even people in our everyday lives or even ourselves. This person might have odd symptoms but not be truly mentally ill. They might have impulses to do things they don't want to do or feel they have no control over their own behavior. They might have unsettling, reoccurring thoughts, explosive anger, or addictions they can't get rid of. Of course, these things in and of themselves don't indicate anything evil. But if these things have no explanation or psychological root, or if they continue to get worse even with medical intervention, maybe we shouldn't be so quick to dismiss the notion that they could be coming from somewhere else. Perhaps the evidence of a negative influence isn't always like Annalise or Ms. Ammons' children. Perhaps it's far more subtle. For example, there are a few cases where an argument could be made about whether certain serial killers were possessed or being manipulated, especially regarding those who tried to stop their behavior but were unsuccessful. Jeffrey Dahmer comes to mind, as does Ted Bundy. Neither had any real psychological reason for their behavior, unlike most other serial killers, and both reported repeated unsuccessful efforts to stop. Neither of these people had any episode like the cases discussed here, but they claim to feel controlled. Whether this is true is, of course, debatable. Serial killers are notorious liars. But the argument is intriguing, and it's one that warrants examination. And in fact, I actually did a case study on that exact subject, and I will go ahead and link it in the information below along with the rest of the information. In the end, science and medicine can explain most instances of supposed possession or oppression, which is where someone is being harassed by an entity. But in situations where it can't, perhaps we should remember that there are things we cannot explain or understand in this world. After all, regardless of which side we fall on in this debate, we must recognize that even science acknowledges it cannot explain everything with its limited scope. Hence the scientific tenet that absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. You've been listening to the Meditations and More podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. May the Great Spirit bless you and have a wonderful day.